Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Over the course of their expedition, Lewis and Clark came into contact with nearly 50 Native American tribes. Some had never seen a white man before, while others spoke bits of English and wore hats and coats they received from Europeans. Presentation College History Professor Brad Tennant says that while the meetings between the Corps of Discovery Expedition and the Native populations were mostly relatively peaceful and friendly, well, the most strained meetings occurred in present-day South Dakota when Lewis and Clark held counsel with the Teton Sioux, or Lakota. Tennant is a longtime member of the Encounters on the Prairie South Dakota chapter of the Lewis and Clark Trail Heritage Foundation. He also presents programs about Lewis and Clark and state history as a part of the South Dakota Humanities Council Speakers Bureau. He joins us on the line from Aberdeen. And Professor Tennant, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, how much did Lewis and Clark know about the various tribes before they started on the Corps of Discovery expedition?
As far as the first part of the expedition, going from the St. Louis area up to the Mandan villages in present-day North Dakota, they had a great deal of information. They had maps, they had journals, they, of course, spent the winter of 1803, 1804 down in the St. Louis area, so they were able to visit with a number of people and have a pretty good idea of who they were going to meet and where they could expect to meet them.
Did either Meriwether Lewis or William Clark have much interaction with American Indians before the expedition?
Not so much before, no. Like I said, in the St. Louis area, they met with a lot of different Frenchmen, a lot of traders, people who had gone up and down the Missouri River as far as the Mandan villages. But it was really as they started progressing up the Missouri River that they started coming in contact with the different groups. And William Clark especially was given the task of trying to keep a record of as many different details as possible about the individual tribes, physical characteristics, language, customs, religion, history, with whom did they have wars, you know, all these different things, trying to keep as much information as possible because that was going to be important for American traders later on.
What were their general attitudes regarding the American Indian tribes?
I that was one of the objectives, one of the things that Thomas Jefferson had instructed them to do is to meet as many of these individuals and individual nations as possible, knowing that it was going to be important for American trade later on. And so I think that was part of their responsibility, was to meet with them, to find them. In terms of the Teton Sioux, the Lakota in the area of Fort Pier and Pier, that was the group whom they had heard the most about as far as being apprehensive of that they might extract some kind of toll before they'd be allowed to continue up the river. So in terms of meeting with other groups, they were looking forward to that. There was a certain amount of anxiety, certainly, with meeting the Lakota or the Teton.
Now, for President Jefferson, did he have certain instructions that he wanted for Lewis and Clark when they were meeting with tribes during the expedition?
Jefferson's most famous set of instructions came on June 20th, 1803, to Meriwether Lewis, and he outlines that he wanted them to study plant life, animal life, but then to also meet with the people, as you said, the commerce which may be carried on with the people inhabiting the line you will pursue. So that was certainly a big part of the objective, was to meet with as many Indian nations as possible, and to find out as much as he possibly could about these different groups of people.
Did the tribes they met have any understanding of this concept that their lands now belong to the United States, and that this man way out east, Jefferson, was their new great father?
That's a good point. Certainly Lewis and Clark had different gifts, different medals, different certificates, and then so on that they gave to respective leaders. But when it came right down to it, it was the idea that they were supposed to convey this idea that they were now under American authority. And that was certainly something hard to grasp. I mean, for a lot of the different Indian leaders who received different gifts, it was just another gift. They had received these from British, from French, from Spanish officials before, so it was something different. And that's one of the things I always try to stress, too, is that with the Louisiana Purchase for $15 million, what exactly did the United States acquire? And I always stress, and then this comes from a historian by the name of Felix Cohen, he said that for $15 million, what the United States actually acquired was the political authority over these different nations. That if it actually involved the land itself, well, then we never would have needed treaties of 1851 or 1858 or 1868 because it would have been covered by the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. So to convey this idea that they were now under American political authority, that they should only trade with American traders, don't trade with the Spanish or the French or the British, that was something that was hard for a lot of tribes to relate to.
Now, in late August of 1804, Lewis and Clark met with the Yankton Sioux. This is in present-day southern South Dakota. How were they received there?
That two-day conference or council with the Yankton Sioux went really well. As Lewis and Clark were coming up the river, I think it was in June, they met a gentleman by the name of Pierre Dorion. And Pierre Dorion had actually lived with the Yankton Sioux for 20 years, had a family, spoke the language very well. And they recruited him to serve as a translator, as an interpreter. So during those 2 days of August 30th and 31st, they had that benefit of having a qualified interpreter. The problem was that Pierre Dorion did not continue with Lewis and Clark beyond the Yankton. And so the next group with whom they met would be the Teton Sioux. And one of the biggest challenges they had there certainly was the language barrier.
Now, the Yankton Sioux, they were already familiar with British and French traders, so was their understanding of the Lewis and Clark expedition more that they were also traders?
That they were making the way for trade, that Lewis and Clark essentially asked them, you know, what kind of trade goods would you need, and the Yankton Sioux at that particular time were very eager to open up trade with American traders. So they were looking forward to that, and that was, like I said, it was a very well received council for those 2 days, and both the Yankton and the Lewis and Clark expedition felt that it went very well.
Now things were a little bit different, as you mentioned, Professor Tennant, when they were further north, the Teton Sioux or Lakota in the Fort Pierre area, and there was that language barrier. Why didn't they bring their interpreter with them up north?
Good question. It's you know, one historian has referred to that as their first big mistake, that the failure to bring Pierre Dorion with them was really something that just contributed to the tension and the anxiety when they did meet with the Teton Sioux. They did have a couple of other individuals, Francois Labiche and Pierre Crozat, were of mixed background. They were of French and Omaha. And with the language, they figured that perhaps those two individuals would have enough of a language knowledge that they would be able to communicate with the Lakota. When it came right down to it, they just simply could not communicate very effectively. There was also George Drewyer, who did sign language quite well, and that he played a very important role throughout the entire expedition. But at the same time, sign language and trying to get into specific details just simply was not very effective.
Now, early on in the meeting with the Teton Sioux, there was some confusion over a horse, a stolen horse?
That's one of the things that concerned them, is that they had heard so many negative things about the Teton Sioux, that they were going to be these bullies, so to speak, that they were going to challenge Lewis and Clark's authority. And even when they left the Yankton Sioux, there was a Yankton leader by the name of Half Man, and he said something to the effect that you better be careful because the next group with whom you'll come in contact, that their ears won't be as open as ours. And so they have this incredible amount of apprehension already. And then a few days before they actually meet the large body of the Teton, a horse disappears, and automatically they believe that it was the Teton who stole this horse. Whether there's any justification for that or not, you know, that's questionable. But automatically it went to, well, it had to be the Teton. We're getting close to the Teton, you know. So that apprehension and that anxiety just kept mounting as they were getting closer and closer to them.
It sounds like they already had their minds set before they reached this area, before they met the Teton Sioux, and it didn't help that they had all the language barriers. That this was almost a meeting that was, you know, it was almost seems like it was already set for failure.
That, you know, there were a lot of things that certainly would point in that direction. Not only did you have the language barrier, not only did you have these preconceived notions that there was going to be trouble to begin with, but you know, you're also talking about a battle of wills. You know, Lewis and Clark, they were very strong-willed. They were not going to be bullied by the Teton. Within the Teton, you even had some political challenges going on there between their leadership, Black Buffalo and Buffalo Medicine, that some people believe that they were really challenging one another, and that they often put the entire group at risk because of their intra-tribal conflicts that they had going too. So there was a combination of a lot of different things going on.
There was a tense confrontation that almost led to violence, and this was when the Lakota leaders were invited to join Lewis and Clark on the Keel Board. Is that where the tense confrontation began?
That's where it really begins. You know, it was September 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th, 1804. And, of course, Lewis and Clark invited the leadership. They invited three of the Teton out to the Keel Boat, Black Buffalo, Buffalo Medicine, and the third one, whom they referred to as the Partisan. And actually, there was a lot more confrontation, I suppose, between the Partisan and Black Buffalo than between Black Buffalo and Buffalo Medicine. But you had these three different leaders out on the Keel Boat. And according to the journals, he said that the Partisan had sucked a bottle of alcohol dry and that he started to feign drunkenness, and that as Clark takes one of the pirogues with some of the men and escorts these three Lakota leaders back to the shoreline, that that the Partisan started to act a little belligerent and started to brush up against him. Clark actually draws his sword. And with that, you have all these Lakota warriors along the shoreline who start getting their weapons ready, and you have the men of the Lewis and Clark expedition, they start getting their weapons ready. And I mean, it's one of those situations that a shot fired on either side could very well have been the end of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Fortunately, it was Black Buffalo who intervened, and he was able to settle things down. And the next day, Lewis and Clark are treated to a day of feasting and dancing. And, you know, so it goes from the first day where they're so concerned, and then the second day it's, well, this isn't so bad, and it's like that. It's a roller coaster ride up and down for the whole 4-day period.
You're listening to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Professor Brad Tennant of Presentation College in Aberdeen about the Lewis and Clark expeditions meeting with the Native American tribes along the Missouri River in present-day South Dakota. When Lewis and Clark met the Teton Sioux, and then after that, that council with them for those few days, after that was over, when they were on their way north, what was sort of their thoughts on that meeting with the Teton Sioux, how it went, and what did that mean for the future relations with the Lakota in this part of South Dakota?
You know, at the time, they were very concerned that the Teton might be following after them, that they might be trying to ambush them at some other point up the river. For a number of days, they actually tried to camp on sandbars in the middle of the river channel as opposed to on the shoreline, just because they had this fear that the Teton would be pursuing them. That continued up until they finally met with the Arikara beginning on October 8th. But one of the more interesting aspects of this, I guess, is that with the Arikara, they spend 5 days with them, and they get along with them really well. Now, after the Lewis and Clark expedition, the roles tend to reverse. And throughout much of the fur trade period up through the first half of the 19th century, the Lakota actually traded much more with American traders and tended to get along better than American traders did with the Arikara. So it reversed as far as having a great time with the Arikara, but then afterwards, the Arikara really turning against American trade.
And why was that? Was that directly related to Lewis and Clark?
To a certain degree. When they met with the Arikara, one of the Arikara leaders was a man who they referred to as Eagle Feather. And as with many of the other American Indian leaders, they tried to get some of them to go back east. And so in April of 1805, Eagle Feather actually leaves with the Keel Boat from the Mandan villages and goes down to St. Louis, eventually goes to the eastern part of the United States, becomes ill, and dies. And so here's one of their most notable leaders who goes away with these Americans, never to return. And so that created problems. The whole idea of Lewis and Clark trying to convey that tribe should only trade with American traders, well, that also took away a very important role, the Arikara, who served as the middlemen for a lot of the intertribal trade. So there was resentment toward that as well. So there was a combination of factors that really turned the Arikara against the Americans.
Now, the Arikara, these were agricultural people, generally?
Yes. In fact, after Lewis and Clark left the Teton in the central part of what is now South Dakota, they started to see a number of abandoned Arikara villages. A lot of archaeologists, a lot of historians believe that there were at one time as many as 32 Arikara villages, housing maybe up to 1,000 individuals. Well, back in 1780, 1781, there was a huge smallpox epidemic, and it's estimated that about 90% of the Arikara population had died because of that epidemic. When Lewis and Clark come across the first of the Arikara villages, there's only three left. This is along the Grand River and pretty much in the Mobridge area in the north-central part of South Dakota. But these are really the three surviving villages of the Arikara. They were very well known as village farmers, that they grew corn and beans and squash and lived in earth lodges as opposed to teepees. So every time they met a different Indian nation, it was a whole different culture.
Now, as the Lewis and Clark expedition moved north, they met up with probably the person who's best known, the Native American who's best known to people today, and that's Sacagawea or Sacajawea. What was her role? I know that she's been described often as a guide, but she was, what, more of an interpreter?
I think her role as interpreter was probably more important than that of a guide. When Toussaint Charbonneau was hired on to serve as a translator, it was also under the idea that his wife, Sacagawea, would come with them, along with the baby. Sacagawea gave birth to Jean-Baptiste Trudeau on February 11th, 1805. The expedition, the main party, would leave the Mandan villages on April 7th, 1805, which meant that this child was only a couple months old. And so you have 33 members of the permanent party, as they say, which includes Toussaint Charbonneau, Sacagawea, and the baby. And there were certain places where, obviously, Sacagawea recognized certain locations, but she'd never been to the West Coast, so it's not like she could serve as a guide and lead them all the way out to the Pacific Northwest. But her presence was very important. When they met with the Shoshone, her brother, Kamehameha, is the leader of the Shoshone, which is going to be a huge, huge plus for Lewis and Clark, and help them get horses and guides to take them over the mountains. The fact that here was a group of people who had a woman and a baby, well, that was important, too, because no war party would ever have a woman and a child with them. So it was the idea that this was a peaceful party.
This is, again, we can talk about what would have happened and wondering what would have happened if Lewis and Clark hadn't come across Sacagawea.
It would have been a challenge. They knew that the farther west that they would go, the more likely they were to come in contact with tribes that would have horses, and they knew that they would have to have horses to get over the Rocky Mountains. And that was part of the reason, as far as allowing her to come with them, is that they knew that she was Shoshone, and from everything that they'd gathered, the next tribe with whom they would meet would be that of the Shoshone. And so they thought, well, this is going to be very important. I suppose you could say they learned a lesson from the Teton incident without having that qualified interpreter. And so it was considered to be very important for her to be there as a translator, as an interpreter. Even at that, it's always interesting to think about how conversations would have gone, to go from English to French to Hidatsa to Shoshone, at one point even going from Shoshone to Nez Perce, and then having to reverse all that with a reply. So it had to be an incredible challenge as far as communicating.
Well, Professor Tennant, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday and sharing a little bit of the history of Lewis and Clark and the American Indian tribes that they met on the expedition.
Well, thank you for having me.